I don't think I'm a preacher. I don't really think I'm a teacher. I think I'm more of a testimony sharer. I don't ask them if you've ever been to a woman's workshop. Yes. Do we use the PowerPoint at all?
No,
we don't ever use the PowerPoint. So they're like, what do you need for your PowerPoint slide? I'm like, I'm a little more of Miss Christie. Where is Miss Christie? We show up in our bare feet and we use hot glue and cardboard. And so that's actually what this table is all about today. I'm just going to be me and be authentic. I'm going to do this my way, my style, and share you a story of what I've been through, because I hope as you hear what I've been through recently, you might see yourself in this journey. So, people who, hands up if you know me from Harvest Hoedown days, workshop days, kids event days, women's groups days. Okay, so a number of people know me, but my name is Carol Conroy. What I usually, well, I used to do is split hair nursing. Doesn't sound exciting, but I always see Jesus was a defeat. So it's okay. So I did foot care for a long time, but I've moved more into faith-based life coaching with women and girls primarily. And in doing that, I remember going for a jog one day because people would say, what should we do? What should we do? What should we do? I have all these decisions. I don't know what to do. And I went for a jog one day, and literally it was like early in the morning it came to me that when you need to know the right thing to do, what is the right thing to do, there's three things you need to line up and make happen. And so I'm going to start using my boxes. And so for the women or girls who I've talked to before, you will recognize that this T stands for doing the right thing. You have to think, okay, is this the right thing according to our King in the Bible? Does it actually say it's right to do? And I used a funny one, like it says, thou shalt not murder. Yeah, can't do that one. So things that God say are the right thing. That's what the T's for. The next one, if you've been a lady who's come to the workshop, what would this one be? The right, who said it? Christine gets a point. M, right motive. So you need to know the right thing. You need to be doing the right thing with the right motive. And then for any of the women or girls, what would the O stand for? Obedience. That is like a really great guess. It's incorrect. Anyone else? That's okay. You need to, pardon? Christine, let's give her a clap. That's two to her. She's like the front row girl. It's right order. So this one, we need to do the right thing, particularly with the right motive. We see that with the Pharisees, but they were doing lots of the right things, but with very wrong motives. Remember, the cup is clean on the outside, but dirty on the inside. Wrong motive. And the order comes from 2 Timothy and Titus, where it talks about leaders and elders of the church needing to, like, be spiritually blameless, like, work on their spiritual lives, you know, have the partner, have a spouse, like, work on their spouse value, take care of their family, take care of their home before they go out and serve. And so this was something that really spoke to me, because for a long time, I would have been doing the right thing, maybe with the right motive. I was in my order out of check. So I realized you have to have all three in check, and that's when you kind of get what we called, or at one of the events I spoke at, a Jesus jackpot. Get all three, it's like a Jesus jackpot. Can't have two, can't have just, you have to have all three. That's a Jesus jackpot. And what happens when you're doing right thing, right motive, right order, living in Jesus jackpot land, like living that righteous life. And all the fruits that we read in the Bible that are supposed to come true, literally do come true. I can speak to when I started living more righteously, I started having more peace, more joy, more rest. I started to be much more brave. People would say I have a lot of confidence, very bold. And I love living this way. This is how I live my life and how I taught people to live their life. But recently, a little bit over the last couple of months, and then probably about a month ago, I started to not feel peaceful. I started feeling like tense in my jaw. My stomach, actually, sometimes I didn't feel hungry. And if anybody knows me, if I'm not hungry, but I'm not eating, something is wrong. I started feeling sick a little in my stomach. I started not sleeping particularly well. Things started to feel a little off physically. Emotionally, usually I'm pretty stable. Like, people are like, Carol, you are stable, living righteously. And I remember talking to Darren, who's traveling, Darren's my husband, talking to Darren, and he's like, what? And he's gone, and so I'm like, what is going on with you? You're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. Like, what is, something's off. Mentally, I was coaching. I felt uncomfortable coaching, not like bold and strong. I even had two people once contact me after our coaching sessions to be like, are you okay? Like, I literally had a lady in Calgary text me that night. Are you okay? Like, something is off with you. Something was off with me, but I wasn't sure what it was until I started to pay attention to the tension in my life. I was like, I can't put this off. Like, I feel like I'm falling apart. What is wrong? I know the recipe. Right thing, right motive, right order. Right thing, right motive, right order. Right thing, right motive. And it caught me. Some of my motives of what I was doing, I'm sorry, it's still pretty raw, were off. They had got what I would call smelly. They were self-worth areas that were feeding me selfishly. I was listening to, like, fear again, the fear of failure, different things. And so when your motives go off, what looks like a right thing, just like those Pharisees, turns sour. And not only did it start to mess with me, it was messing with my soul. I felt like I had soul angst. My order got way off. Rather than tending, like, I was trying to read my Bible, but it wasn't super clear what God was trying to say, or I had to, like, really work at it, or really listen in my coaching sessions. I wasn't tending well to my home values. Wasn't tending well to my, things were getting out of order, and I had to look at why. And it's because those motives in me had shifted unintentionally. It wasn't like I woke up one day and just thought, oh, I'm going to just go back to those smelly, fear-based ones. That was so much fun so many years ago. Wasn't that a blast? No. It just slowly shifted unintentionally. And I couldn't even see it. I remember talking to the person who I asked to be the truth teller in my life. It's super wise. Find someone who's more spiritually wise than you and talk to them. And I remember them saying, kind of off and on over the couple months, like, are you sure you're not deceiving yourself? Like, are you sure? Like, you're saying all these things. Are you sure you're not deceiving yourself? I was like, no. Like, it's fine. Like, right thing. Right motive. Right order. It's all good. But they were right, and I was wrong. I couldn't see it because I was deceived by those stinky, smelly, fear motives in me. And so, for a while, they're very unintentional, and yet I want to be honest. For a while, sometimes it did. It became like, when I started to become aware of what's going on, I still intentionally held on. I said, no, I don't want to let this thing go. And that, I think, was the worst. I call that straddling the spiritual fence. You're trying to live righteously and hold on to this smelly thing. And it just caused a lot of soul angst in me and a whole lot of feeling. Once I could see more clearly what I was doing, I felt a lot of this word. So you don't have to put your hand up if you've ever resonated with that word. But once I could see and that deception was off of me, a whole lot of guilt and shame landed on me. And I thought, what do I do here? I know, I really think that God had to wake me up and shake me up so that I could see some of the things that I was doing was really out of line. And I was reading Luke at the time. And there was a lot of lessons I felt applied to my life from Luke. But one of them, of course, is maybe you guys know, or a lot of people do, we have two guys in Luke whose motives you could say shift. We have Judas, and we have Peter. And they both do things that make them feel very much like this. A lot of shame, a lot of guilt. And there was two different approaches to what happened and what they did with that. Judas, we know, stayed stuck in shame. He spiritually died. Physically, actually died. What I liked about Peter is he chose a different technique. He didn't just stay in guilt. He didn't just stay in shame. But he decided to believe and choose. And I would say this word rather courageously, because if you've ever had this heavy in your life, it's really hard to believe in this next G word. The G word goes like this. Any guesses? Say it again. When you've done something bad, it is really hard to believe that His grace is sufficient for you. I know I was talking and walking with many friends, And one said, you know, as sin increases, so grace increases more. I think the challenge we have, and this came up in a coaching session recently, is we sort of hierarchy sins. God says they're all the same, but in our head, they shift and change. Because someone even said to me, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. Like, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. But I knew my motives. And to me, I knew they were smelling stinky. And to believe that there was grace to cover that was a little bit hard. And I was talking to some people a little bit about this, and they're like, well, maybe what we need to do to believe that grace is true is forgive yourself. Just forgive yourself. And I thought about that one, too, because it actually doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that that's true. Forgive yourself actually isn't in there. But if I listen to what people would say when they say that, I think what it means is I want to feel no more guilt and shame before I get back into the spiritual game. I want to feel okay before I listen and obey what God says is true. And that came to the next point that I came to in my head is, Carol, you have a choice. You have disobeyed unintentionally, like seriously unintentionally, and then a little intentionally at the end. But you don't want to do the double disobey. And it makes me think of a story. I'll explain that. It makes me think of the story of one of my kids a number of years ago was carrying this wonderful dish out of the back of our vehicle and dropped it unintentionally and shattered and splattered. And there goes my fruit platter. Where's Frankie? That's the urine. And this child felt so bad. And I remember this little one sitting on the couch and crying and said, sorry. And I said, buddy, it's okay. I forgive you. It was unintentional. And he cried and said, sorry. And I'm like, it's okay. It was unintentional. It's over. It's done. We forgive it. And he cried and he cried and he cried and still felt so bad. I'm like, dude, like, listen, Jesus is around. You say sorry. You turn your, you say sorry. You own your error, you get forgiven, it's done. I said, if you keep hanging on to that, feeling bad, then that becomes disobedient. And at the time, it's easy to say to him, and he did, he embraced it, but that was a little bit harder for me to believe with mine. And I shared that in other coaching sessions to other people who feel so bad about their stuff. I'm like, no, I've never given them. But it's a little bit different when it's you. But it still doesn't make it less. And I think of a woman I know, I'm super proud. I remember she shared, she had an affair. She shared she had an affair. And she confessed it, she owned it, she turned, she repented. And in her sharing that, I remember saying to her, my favorite thing about her story is she chose to believe that grace covered her stuff and she got back into living righteously. And I was reading recently in John how Jesus is at the well with that woman who did also sin. And he said, after it all, woman, you're forgiven. Go and sin no more. Like, get back into that spiritual game. Even if you still can't believe, even if you still feel some of that shame, choose to believe and choose courageously. The definition of courage is not the absence of fear. It's the, anyone? Mastery of it. It's not waiting till you're not scared to like open your Bible anymore or go back to church or get back into living as righteously as you can. It's doing it even when you are scared because your brain doesn't believe. How could this thing be forgiven? And yet, that is what God says is the correct method. So, Carol, very scary, shaky legs. Very spiritually shaky legs. I usually don't feel afraid. I haven't felt that afraid for years. I literally had like a breakdown to have a breakthrough to what I was doing. And to keep kind of getting back into God's calling for me was a really scary thing to do. But if I choose to believe what he says is true, not what my brain feels or what my heart feels, and I start living righteously again, what would I achieve? Well, it became this in me.
choosing to do what is true according to God, not just what my head said, grew me a lot. We read a lot in James and other passages about trials and suffering and persevering through it. Persevere it, these sufferings. But we also read in 1 John, I believe it was, there's two kinds of suffering. There's suffering because you're doing the wrong thing with the wrong motive in the wrong order. That is suffering. I suffered. I had my motives off. But then there's suffering for doing the right thing with the right motive and in the right order. And when I was coming out and choosing to live righteously and get back in that spiritual game, that did feel like suffering. I actually had someone say, why don't you just stay home? Just stay home for like a week. Just get out of the world. I thought that was the worst thing to do, girl. Like, don't do that. That is falling back to fear. Get back in that game. Trust the process that God says to do. He says, you live righteously, right thing, right motive, right order. You confess. I confessed to anyone who was involved. And then I started even confessing to some of the ladies I coached. I just wanted to be clean and true and open and do it God's way. I got back into reading my Bible. Well, I didn't stop, but I got in there and let the words poke and soak. Like where God needed to speak to me, I let it be. Stayed in church. Kept doing the things that he said were righteous for me to do. And it did. It grew me, and it also gave me the opportunity to share a little bit of what I've been through with some of the other women I was coaching. So that's one of the things I learned from you achieve when you choose grace is you get growth. And what started to happen, what I started to receive back from God is those physically, I started sleeping better. I felt good in my stomach. Those tense feelings, they literally went away. Mentally, I started thinking clearer again. I felt more comfortable making decisions. Choices were clearer for me to make. Emotionally, I had much more stability. And spiritually, that was the best one at all. For a while there, it felt like I couldn't hear God talking to me when I was like in my coaching sessions. They weren't flowing and being fluid. But as I chose to follow right thing, right motive, right order again, he began speaking to me again. And so I guess I say this to realize that I was reading a little bit in John today about Lazarus and how halfway through the story, we know he dies. And halfway through the story, people say, like, what was the point of this? If Jesus was here, shouldn't he have been able to fix this and get this guy, raise him from the dead? Like, why didn't that happen? Why did he have to die? That was only partway through the story. They needed to keep believing because through these type of things, we learn to give God a lot of glory. I would say, you know, a couple months ago, there was getting to be a little bit too much confidence in Carol Conway, the things that she was doing. And I think God had to break some of that down, some of that pride, some of that fear. And now I can stand here and say, when I'm living my life as righteously as I can, all those things that I think people thought were just me came back to his glory. Feeling more settled, feeling more peaceful, feeling more fear-free, feeling more bold, feeling more confident. And now I get to be like he told Peter, when you're done your thing, go tell other people. And that was part of me choosing to do this. Because when Grant called and he said, would you like to speak on August 17th, which is my anniversary, by the way. Thank you, 22, 3 years, 23. What's that? Oh, sorry, what did I say?
17.
That's why I told him not to come. You're going to give me all the feedback that I don't want to hear, Mr. Detail. It's so true. I told you not to come. that is an actual true story. But yeah, no, where I was saying, I know what it was. The lesson in Luke. When I was deciding, should I do this or not? My little spiritual legs were so shaky. I was just nicely building up strength again. I was nicely, right thing, right motive, right order. My little heart was still shaking. Grant calls up and says, hey, I remember when you spoke before. You said you'd like to do it again. How does August 14th sound to you? And I was like, would God actually come through after everything I've been through? And I was reading in Luke where the boys go out fishing, the disciples go out fishing in the boat. And they fished all night this side. And they're pulling up their nets and they're getting nothing. And Jesus says, drop your net on this side and there's going to be something in there. And I thought, you know what, for me, this opportunity actually is fishing for my faith journey back. This wasn't about me, like, impacting people. Okay, maybe it will. Maybe somebody will hear themselves somewhere in one of these boxes. That's great. But for me, this was choosing to believe His grace was enough for me. And if I live right thing, right motive, right order, I will grow spiritually. And it is unto His glory because I have my faith back from this journey. So if this spoke, I don't even know how long it is. He's like, just 20 minutes, he says in the back. 20 minutes. I don't know how long it is, but that wraps up what I've been through, you guys. I so appreciate people listening. And if anybody wants to stay at the end and talk about any of the boxes and places or spaces I've been, I'm so authentic. I'm an open book. But for today, let's just bow our heads and pray. And Jordan and his team can come back up. All right. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you that you do help us see past the deceit, that you care enough to cause a breakdown, to make a breakthrough, that you'll chase me down, just like that last song said, if you chase me down past any lie, past any shadow, to teach me what is true, to move us all past feeling guilt and shame, to choose the courage to believe that your grace is enough, that you can grow us past the wrong kind of suffering into the right kind of suffering, into spiritual maturity, Lord. And then finally, that we really do receive the rewards that you promised, peace, joy, rest, and true happiness. True success, Lord, is a soul at rest. And I'm so grateful you've taught me to be restful in your word. Thank you. We ask these things in your name.